Raised by Soundfest is coming Saturday, December 7th. Go to raisedbysoundfest.com for more information.
Partnership between Crosstown Concourse, the Daily Memphian, and the University of Memphis. Hear us online at WYXR.org, on TuneIn, or on your favorite assistant. Just ask for WYXR.
Welcome once again to the Dagger Mountain Radio Hour. We're coming to you tonight from the Powerhouse Arts Center in Oxford, Mississippi.
When you're feeling terrified and a monster's running wild, can't find no silver bullet, no crucifix, can't call a priest.
Thank you. That'll put a chill in your bones, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Thacker Mountain Radio Hour. As I mentioned, coming to you tonight from the Powerhouse Arts Center right here in downtown Oxford, Mississippi. A fine show for y'all tonight. We've got an author who's been with us many times over the years with his new book. Tonight he's here with us with his new album of his own songs, y'all. Michael Ferris Smith and the Smokes. Yeah. Previewing his new album is called Lostville. Same kind of characters you're used to hearing about or reading about in his books he's put on vinyl, so that'll be fun. Also, our author tonight, Abbott Kaler, her book Eden Undone, about a group of people looking for utopia in 1930s in an island off the coast of South America, and they established their own little city with their own rules, and it goes awry in a very spectacular and even murderous way. We can't wait to talk to Abbott about this page, Turner. It's a crazy book. And to take it home tonight, our very own Yellow Bushwhackers are going to play some appropriately spooky tunes for the season, y'all. So let's welcome them to the stage, our house band. We love them, the Yellow Bushwhackers.
Thank you.
strange. The faces come out of the rain when you're strange. No one remembers your name when you're strange. When you're strange. When you're
Yalla Bushwhackers, y'all, let them hear you. Ricky Burkhead, Slade Lewis, Keon Love, and up front, Count Paul Tate. The Yalla Bushwhackers, one more time for them. People are strange. Where did you ever get such an idea as that, Paul Tate? Actually, that was The Doors, remember? Ooh, what a song. All righty, speaking of songs, Michael Ferris Smith has been writing his novels now for the last 10 years or so, plus. What have you got, 7 out now, I believe? Has readership literally all over the world, so like every self-respecting writer, he desperately wants to be a rock and roll star. And so, but the difference is, Michael can actually write songs. Our good friend Jimbo Mathis got wind of the fact that Michael had some songs written and said, hey, let's record these songs. And Michael, you know, I don't think really had that in mind. He just enjoyed writing them, enjoyed playing them with the band. Jimbo not only suggested they record the songs, make an album, but let's do it at Jim Dickinson's, the late, great Jim Dickinson studio, which still is operating as Zebra Ranch outside of Coldwater, Mississippi. Yeah, you went to the source, man. Jimbo played on the album, couldn't join us tonight. He's out on tour. We love him, hope to see him soon. But Michael has this killer band, The Smokes. The EP is called Lostville, comes out next week. Y'all please welcome Michael Ferris Smith and The Smokes.
Thank you. Happy Halloween.
With the my luck in another town. Still I chase that shooting star. I want to. I sit down back in this old place. The Delta wind is so hard to face. So just let it rain down on me. She walks off beside me with the dirt.
That was called Black Ground, inspired by the Delta. Some of us in here know about that. And this is called Long Way Back.
resounding echo in the call of yesterday. It's all gone astray. And the punishment takes its toll. It turns the young into the old. And it's a long way back to you. Yeah, the punishment takes its toll. Turns the young.
Thank y'all very much. Speaking of a good band, Jim was exactly right, except it's a great band. Let me introduce you to them real quick. Mr. Eric Carlton on keys, Nate Robbins on bass, Bradley Gordon swinging for us, Miss Rosie Posey and Miss Jen Carlton singing so pretty, and Mr. Jesse Pinion and Mr. Kel Kellum on the guitars.
Your love will settle down, your bridges will burn. Your colors, they will fade, your seasons will turn. You'll lay there in the dark, you wait for the sun. You're not the only one. You're not the only one. You'll feel the rain and rust. You feel the cold wind blow. You'll feel the engine thrust. You search for things to know. You'll wonder where you've been. You'll wonder where to go. You're not the only one. Soldiers there, you face them toward the war. You'll charge them up the hill, you make them fight once more. You'll stand in glory bound, you stand in hell to fall. You're not the only one, you're not the only one. You're not.
Paul, the only one. In case you didn't figure that out. Well, it's been fun to be here. We got one more. All right, this one's called Stranded. Look for Lawsonville next week. Look for it in right out there, too, by the way. But I had a great time. Let's go. One more. I see the sun and it shoots red like a loaded gun, and I see the tide horizon staring back at me through the tears and the dreams, the blood in between. I'm coming home, and when it all is said and done, I'm lost with. Get a beer with my last pesada. Old man with an old guitar, he's got a song that breaks your heart. In the day it's hard to run away. So I wait for a purple sky where women dance and the moon is high. And somewhere back across the line, I see the smoke of a better time, and it's true. I'm lost without the warning, I'm coming home. y'all very much. The Smokes.
Michael Ferris Smith and the Smokes, y'all, one more time. Great songs, great band, very cool album. It's called Lostville. It'll be out next week, but this audience here at the Powerhouse is very lucky. We have advanced copies out front in the lobby. Mike will hang out and sign copies of your copy of Lostville. One more time for that great band, those great songs. So happy he did it out at Zebra Ranch, Jim Dickinson Studio. I think Jimbo still runs it, still a live studio. You can still make great records out there. Wonderful. We appreciate that. Thank you, Michael. Great songs. I want to remind you, you're listening to the Thacker Mountain Radio Hour, coming to you tonight from WUMS, University of Mississippi. You also hear us on WYXR, Community Radio in Memphis, WUTC Radio in Chattanooga, Tennessee, the stations of Mississippi Public Broadcasting, the stations of Alabama Public Radio, WUOT in Knoxville, Tennessee, and KNCE, True Taos Radio in Taos, New Mexico. We love them. Thank you, all our listeners out there. I also want to thank our sponsors, the Yana Batava Arts Council. They do so much for us. Visit Oxford, visit Mississippi, the good folks at the Mississippi Arts Commission, Square Books, man, the mothership, Square Books. Freeland Drum Lab, Larry and Michael Johnson Family Foundation, Carol Etheridge Family Foundation, Dr. Stephen and Gay Case, the Snooky and Mary Lou Williams Foundation of Water Valley, Mississippi. You too can be a Thacker backer and keep this show going. We got a 30-year anniversary coming up in a couple of years. More information at thackermountain.org. Keon Love, y'all. Thank you, Keon. You are the man. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Oh, one more. Let's see. Michael's a busy man. That album release party, Friday, November 15th, 8 p.m. at Proud Larry's. Free admission, November 15th, 8 p.m., Proud Larry's. Also, you can now pre-order at your favorite bookstore, Lay Your Armor Down, Michael's new novel, which will be out in May 2025. And when y'all leave, he's going to sweep this place up. So he does it all, y'all, Michael Ferris Smith. All right, speaking of doing it all, Abbott Kaler, the author of this new book, Eden Undone, A True Story of Sex, Murder, and Utopia at the Dawn of World War II. This book is a real-life survival thriller about a group of people who flee civilization and try to find utopia on a remote island off the coast of South America in the 1930s. The experiment, of course, goes horribly awry. It even turns deadly. The book has been described as Charles Darwin meets Agatha Christie. Bizarre. Yes. Bizarre, mesmerizing, and compellingly tragic. Y'all please welcome Abbott Kaler.
Thanks for having me. Thanks, Jim.
Boy, isn't this a humdinger.
It to put it mildly, I guess.
It is absolutely nuts, and you're reading along thinking, whoa, 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 and then you think, these are actually real people who actually did this crazy stuff. And to get us, give an idea of what we're talking about, what was the headline you read when you were doing research that you said, I got to write, I'm interested.
So about 12 years ago, I was researching another book, and I was going through newspaperarchives.com, as writers often do, and came across a headline in a 1941 article in the San Francisco Examiner. And I'm just going to read that headline to you. Quote, was Dr. Ritter with his steel teeth poisoned in paradise? Was the Baroness, otherwise known as Crazy Panties, who ruled the island with a gun and love, murdered by one of her love slaves after she had driven the other to his death? And why is Frau Ritter going back to what she once called, ooh, Hell's Volcano? That was, so I read that headline and said, this is the book I need to write.
And you brought your own sound effects. That's very impressive. Man, when you find out one of the main characters in the book's nickname is Crazy Panties, I'm in. I know y'all are. All right, we want to, the characters are so compelling. Each one could make be their own book. But let's talk about this Dr. Ritter and Dory, who are, we kind of get introduced to them first, so that's who we hang our, tell us about them. And yeah. Again, real people.
Yes, all yeah. real, everything is true. Yeah. So we start off in Germany in 1929 in Berlin. Dr. Frederick Ritter, he's a veteran of World War I. He had a little trauma from that. And he was working at a hospital for therapeutic medicine, thought about the healing powers of water and the healing powers of the mind and kind of forward-thinking things like that. And he was a little bit eccentric. He's made all of his own food. He sewed all of his own clothes. He made his own shoes. He did not trust the civilized shoe. I don't even know what that means, the civilized shoe.
That'll show him.
Yeah, exactly. So we start off with Dr. Ritter, and one of his patients is a woman by the name of Dory Strauch. She's about 10 or so years younger than he is. She's suffering from multiple sclerosis. Every other doctor tells her that her MS can't be cured, but Frederick comes along and kind of mansplains the MS to her and says, hey, if you just put your mind to it, you could cure your multiple sclerosis.
Right.
And she's fascinated by this guy. And I love in her memoir, I think she's partly fascinated with him because she was married to a boring guy who was bad in bed, or so she said.
Wow.
So these two hook up and start talking about going to the Galapagos Islands together.
And amazingly, you mentioned the husband. Dory talks her husband and Dr. Ritter's wife into living together while they run off to South America, right?
Yeah, easy peasy, right? You just trade spouses. You tell Frederick's wife, who was more of a traditional woman, to go and take care of Dory's husband, who was really happy with this arrangement, even gave them some money to send them on their way. You get the sense that they really wanted to get rid of these two.
Yeah, they agreed to it a little too quickly.
Yeah.
Very happy. Oh, yeah. Trade? Oh, yeah, sure. And, you know, and a draft pick to be named later. Right. All right. Yeah, these people are interesting enough. We have even gotten to the Baroness. Tell us about this woman, the Baroness.
So,
again,
Baroness.
A real person.
Otherwise known as Crazy Panties, if you would say.
Yes,
said.
Crazy Panties.
So to set the scene for you a little bit, Dory and Frederick have made their home on the Galapagos Islands. People start hearing about this experiment. American explorers come down and spread the word about this modern-day Adam and Eve living on this remote island in Floriana. The fact that Frederick Ritter extracted all of his teeth and had them replaced by a set of steel dentures. the good folks at Square Books provided me with my own steel dentures tonight.
They think of everything. They truly do.
And so she hears about it, and she's in Paris at this time. She's married to a French war hero, but she has lovers. She has orgies. She seduces men and women alike. And she says that she hears a voice belonging to God, that tells her she needs to go to the Galapagos Island and conquer it. So she shows up in the Galapagos Island with two of her lovers, the aforementioned love slaves. Announces that she's going to turn Floriana Island into Miami, a Miami catering to American millionaires who want to come to her luxury hotel.
Yeah, now, originally, Dr. Ritter and Dory, particularly Dr. Ritter, it's his idea to get away from society, makes his own shoes, all that stuff. So he wants to get away from everything. He's tired of people. And by the way, this is 1930s Germany.
Yeah.
And Adolf is out there making his way forward. He hadn't taken office yet, but he's...
Yeah, so there was chaos happening in Berlin and Germany and in Europe in general, and also the global economy was crashing because Wall Street collapsed. So there was a lot of chaos going on that was influencing people to get down to this island for their own version of utopia.
And he apparently was a man of means, being a physician and a dentist, so he could pull it off, leaving Germany to go there. And as you were reading, you were saying all the attributes. Let's let this sink in. This guy pulled all of his own teeth out and replaced them with steel dentures.
Well, he had a theory that gums could become horny enough, in his words, to act as teeth. So you don't need your teeth. Your gums will just get horny enough and to chew steak for you. I mean, he had all kinds of... And I think that was one of his more mild philosophies.
Horny gums and crazy panties, ladies and gentlemen. Are you getting the picture here? What could go wrong? This is... Now... One of my favorite characters. God, they're all my favorite characters, but Captain Hancock. There's got to be one kind of dashing good guy in the middle of all this.
Yeah.
And I hope we haven't found anything bad out about it. Captain Hancock, tell us about George Allen Hancock.
So George Allen Hancock was one of the many American explorers who came down to the island at this time, you know, ostensibly to look for exotic flora and fauna to bring it back to United States zoos and museums and that kind of thing, but became much more interested in the exotic human beings he was encountering. Right. And he was, if anybody's familiar with Los Angeles, where Hancock is from, his family owned the oil-rich La Brea tar pits. Hancock Park is named after his family. So he shows up, and he becomes very good friends with the Baroness and with Frederick and Dory and all the other characters who showed up on the island, and became their confidant. And anytime something was going wrong, the first thing they'd do was go complain to Captain Hancock, and Daddy Hancock would come back over and try to calm things down on the island.
Yeah, and he had his flaws. He was not exactly great with wildlife. He would capture them and put them on a boat, take them back to the mainland.
Right? Yeah.
Flamingos, and so forth. Now, we've sort of set the stage. We do want to give them a little taste, and we're really going to go, you know, break the limits of public radio. I'd like for you to read one of the steamy sex scenes from the book, please.
Okay. So one of Hancock's scientists came upon this scene. It was the sight of two land iguanas having some fun. And here it goes. Quote, "The male had the female by the nape of her neck with his mouth, and held on, working closer every time she moved, until finally, by sliding to one side, he got his tail under hers, and she sort of turned so the bilobed penis could be inserted. He finally made contact, and after stroking for several minutes, reached the climax and released his hold of her, and sort of paralyzed and limp, he lay still and exhausted. While the female crawled from beneath him, he lay motionless for 5 minutes with his penis exposed, and he only moved after I had hit him several times with a net." So sitting in the archives, I came across this passage, and I felt like I needed a cigarette after reading that.
Nothing like a good iguana cigarette. That's what I always say.
But let me just say, this explorer, there was no punctuation in this. So you got the sense that this guy had his notebook, and he just was like this, not doing any periods or commas or anything like that.
And speaking of your research, I could just imagine you in some library reading this stuff going, oh, I can't wait to put this in a book. What I found interesting, among a lot of things, back in the 30s, how quick they were to write. They all kept journals. They all kept diaries. In fact, at one point, Dr. Ritter, in the middle of a dinner party, slips away to write somebody a letter.
Yeah.
And that, for someone like you, it's just a gold mine, right? There's so much documentation.
Yeah, and I think that part of the reason there's a lot of documentation is, we were talking about earlier, that the extreme self-isolation that these people were living under. And you can imagine that when you're only surrounded by crazy people, you yourself are going to get crazier and crazier. And writing letters to Hancock and the other American explorers was a way, I think, of just sort of testing the sanity and just being like, let me tell you what's going on here, and please get back here, because I think something happened, but I have no proof of it, and I want to see if you can come here and, you know, verify what I'm thinking. And sort of Hancock and all these people became touchstones for them, and the letters were fast and furious. I think one of my favorite was Frederick Ritter writing to the governor of the Galapagos, saying that the Baroness needed to be placed in a sanitarium. The governor of the Galapagos, of course, comes to visit Floriana, interviews the Baroness, and she seduces him. Oh. So what are you going to do, you know?
Yeah, and that's on top of the two guys she brought with her for that purpose. Yeah.
Well, the American tourists would come and say that the Baroness's hotel was a festering sex complex. That's what one of them said.
Wow. Heavy on the festering, I'm sure. Yeah. Again, the Baroness, just a real character, but also very capable of cruelty. And actually, all eight of these inhabitants, Dr. Ritter, who's trained as a doctor, refused to treat in any of the other eight. He said, "I didn't come here to practice medicine." So there was.
Yeah, and he was full of contradictions. I mean, I think one of my favorite contradictions of his was he professed to be a man of peace, a doctor to help people, and he also claimed that he wouldn't even eat potatoes because you had to yank them from the ground by force. That's how much of a pacifist he was, and yet, of course, as he displays later on, he has no problem being violent himself.
Yeah, he changes very much so. And Dory is sort of the hero of this book. She endures so much. we haven't even touched on how hard it is to get around. Like, to go check your mail is this incredible walk over. I mean, describe that trail.
Yeah.
What it does, it shreds your feet. You got bleeding feet.
Well, that's the thing about the Galapagos. You know, it's not these golden shore, waving palm trees, lush vegetation island. The Galapagos are volcanic islands. They're covered in lava rock. A lot of them don't have fresh water. People really can't live on most of them. The only reason they could live on Floriana is because there was one freshwater spring, which, of course, the Baroness washed her feet in. Everybody's drinking water.
Yeah,
but it was not easy living. And, you know, and I went there to visit in 2022, and I was just like, oh, my God, I can't believe people live here. And just thinking about how much more difficult it was in 1930 when they had no modern convenience at all.
Yeah, it's an incredible story. As we say, things do go awry. And speaking of going awry, they've already made a movie out of this.
Yeah, well,
it better be good.
It better be good. I was just finishing up a draft of this book that I'd worked on for 12 years, and I heard that Ron Howard has a movie coming out about this very same story. It's starring, let me just say, all of the main characters are getting a great Hollywood glow up. Jude Law is playing Frederick Ritter. Vanessa Kirby is playing Dory Strach. Sydney Sweeney is playing one of the other housewives who come right after Frederick and Dory. And Ana de Armas is playing the Baroness, which might be the biggest glow up of all. And it premiered at the Toronto Film Festival in September, but it's not out for anybody to see yet. I haven't seen it. Hopefully it'll be in theaters sometime soon. And I hope people read the Stranger the Fiction True Story before seeing the fictionalized version.
Yeah, I can't imagine the movie. How many times does the movie live up to the book? Almost never. The Godfather is about the only one I can think of. So he's done a trick if it's better than this book, because this book is like, I was thinking it's a guilty pleasure without the guilty part, because it's so written so well. There's no, you don't have to hide it from people. It's a great story.
Thanks so much, Jim.
You really rendered it well. And before we close, I don't want to get all psychological on us, but I couldn't help but think what you think about mankind and humankind and this idea of utopia and people getting along on a small island. What did you come away with after these crazy characters? And they betray each other. We won't even get into
it. Yeah.
Obviously, there's a murder that happens or two.
Yeah. I mean, I think the idea of utopia, it sounds wonderful, right? You go to a paradise of your own making and sort of start fresh, and it's exactly what you want it to be. But the problem, of course, is that everybody has a different idea of utopia. And when you have a bunch of different ideas of utopia, trying to create utopia in one small island with one freshwater spring and a couple really crazy people, it's not going to go well. And the worst of humans will come out. And as the old adage says, you know, wherever you go, there you are. So.
That's it. Abbott Kaler, y'all.
Thanks, everybody. Thank you.
Great job. Eden Undone. A true story of sex, murder, and utopia at the dawn of World War II. It is from Crown Books. And Abbott's going to join us after the show out front and sign a whole bunch of copies of Eden Undone. It will be a great read. This will be a perfect night for it. Rainy kind of night. Curl up with this book. You will not believe it. One more time, y'all, for Abbott Kaler.
Great job. Great job.
All righty, y'all, we do this show every week, week in and week out, and the good old Yellow Bushwhackers show up here, you know, basically sober, and play every week, but we don't get to hear near enough of them. We thought this would be a perfect night to hear a set from our own band. Why go out and get a band when you got the greatest band, live radio band in the land, playing some wonderful spooky stuff? Y'all, please welcome Paul Tate and the Yellow Bushwhackers.
Thank y'all. So I was working in my bedroom the other night. I was arranging the Michael Myers theme, and one of my grandkids came in there and said, "Tata, what are you?" They called me Tata, and said, "What are you doing?" And he heard the Michael Myers. He said, "That's my favorite Halloween song, Tata." And I said, "What's your second one?" He said, "Season of the Witch." And he's in the fourth grade. That was his. What a strange child. So anyway, Fields, this is for you.
Mm-hmm.
many sights to see. And when I look to my window, so many different people to be. And it's strange, so strange. You've got to pick up every. me growl. So much, we're gonna end with one you may know. When the sun goes down and the moon comes up, I turn into a teenage cuckoo mom. Yeah, I cruise through the city.
Mountain Radio Hour's executive director is Lucy Gaines. Our production director is Tim Lee. Our broadcast and post-production engineer is Jeffrey Reed. Our front of house engineer is Blake Gardner.
Acoustic Sunday Live, now in its third decade, is proud to support WIXR and to present the Concert to Protect Our Aquifer, taking place at 7 p.m. on Sunday, December 15th at First Congo Church, located at 1000 Cooper Street. Performances by folk and songwriter legends Tom Rush and Steve Forbert, Shakura Saida, and Tim Easton, with special guests Ann Harris and Marcella Simeon. More information at 901-237-2972 or acousticsundaylive.com. The 2024 Grind City Coffee Expo returns Saturday, November 16th from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. at Crosstown Arts, celebrating the culture in and around coffee, featuring new vendors, discussion panels, a virtual reality art gallery, and coffee and cocktail demos to continue highlighting the ever-growing coffee scene. All proceeds